This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Chase Gunnell, Communications Director for Conservation Northwest. Chase Gunnell is here to tell us about the work of Conservation Northwest to protect, connect, and restore wildlands and wildlife from the Washington coast to the British Columbia Rockies, for the benefit of people and wildlife. Welcome, Chase.
Good morning.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Conservation Northwest, your history and purpose?
I would. Thank you for having me on today. Conservation Northwest is a regional environmental conservation organization. We were founded in Bellingham, Washington in 1989, and in the 30 years since, we've worked around our region to protect wildlands and habitat, connect vital areas that wildlife need as they move through our region, and to restore endangered and native species, from wolves to grizzly bears to fishers and mountain caribou.
Before we go into detail, would you give a brief overview of your programs?
So Conservation Northwest, we're based here in Seattle, and we've got field offices around eastern Washington as well as up into British Columbia. We pride ourselves on being an international organization. Wildlife don't recognize our political boundaries, so we feel it's important to work on both sides of the border. We work on endangered species recovery and working to protect native wildlife, to bring them back to our region as we face changing conditions and habitat loss. We work to protect wildlands and habitat, areas such as the North Cascades, Mount Rainier, wilderness areas, public lands. It's important that we conserve these wild spaces, both for wildlife that call them home, as well as for the many people that enjoy recreating, living, or working around them. We also work to get volunteers out in the field to conduct research. We find that the power of the hikers, the campers, the people out recreating in the North Cascades and other areas is tremendous, and we help put that power to use for science and augment research projects that professional scientists are undertaking. This program has been around for more than 10 years, and we've been able to document animals from wolves to wolverines and contribute to scientific data on these rare species in our region.
What are the key threats or challenges for wildlife in the Pacific Northwest?
The Pacific Northwest, we're lucky to have abundant wild areas that are large and connected. The Cascades is an ecosystem that stretches from the Canadian border and even beyond, down at least to Mount Rainier and then all the way to the Columbia River. And we've got this large wild area. We see other wild areas in eastern Washington around the Columbia Basin and northeast Washington, an area called the Columbia Highlands. So we're lucky to have these intact wild places here, even as our region grows. But that growth does present challenges. We have more people moving into areas that used to be habitat. We have new roads and development going up that fragments wildlife habitat. And simply our population, the amount of people in the areas where wildlife live is increasing. And all of these present challenges. But I think we have a unique opportunity here in the Northwest to balance this growth and this development with our natural heritage. We like to say here in Washington that innovation is in our nature. Well, I think our nature needs innovation, and there's plenty of it here to go around.
Let's talk now about your wildlife monitoring project. What is the purpose of the project?
Yeah, so the Citizen Wildlife Monitoring Project sends volunteers, over 100 each year, out into the Cascades, British Columbia, and Northeast Washington to help document and obtain data on rare and recovering species. Some of our key species that we do monitoring around are wolverines in the North Cascades, grizzly bears in the North Cascades, wolves across Washington, Canada lynx in Northeast Washington and British Columbia, and fishers in the South Cascades of Washington. These are species that are not typically common. There's quite few of them in our region. Some of them are recovering, such as wolverines and wolves. And we want to help scientists get a better understanding of their populations in our region, where they live, what habitat they're using, what areas they're moving through. And this data can help contribute to other projects, such as wildlife crossings, that'll help sustain these animals into the future. There's many scientists from several different agencies working on similar research projects in our region, and what we do is connect those scientists with people that are already going out hiking or camping or backcountry skiing. It gives them more resources to contribute to their studies, and it allows people who are already out enjoying the great outdoors in our region to contribute to conservation of some of our rarest animal species. It's really a win-win project.
What are the details of how the monitoring is set up?
So we do several types of data gathering. One of the most common is what we would call remote camera traps. And these are those trail cameras you may have seen. They are motion activated. Sometimes they shoot video. Most often they shoot photos. And we'll set them up in areas that we've identified as likely travel corridors or key habitat locations in an attempt to document some of these rare and recovering species in our region. The example that I often share is wolverines. There's fewer than 30 wolverines in Washington. They're an icon of wilderness and a tremendously rare species, but they are returning to our state. It's a success story that's been happening for the last few years. And scientists want to get a better understanding of what the wolverine population is in the North Cascades and other areas, where they're moving to, what habitat they're using. And we'll work with volunteers to go out and set up a camera trap site. Often these are what we call a run pole, a feature that a wolverine will climb up on in an attempt to grab a piece of bait or sometimes a scent lure. And in that process, they'll activate the motion camera, and that camera will get a photo of them. And wolverines are kind of like dogs in that many of them have a unique coating, a chest blaze that has a unique pattern on it, kind of like a thumbprint. And you can actually identify an individual wolverine from that thumbprint. So this program, through the power of volunteer hikers and backcountry skiers, is actually obtaining data that can be used to document individual wolverines that then scientists can use to add to their surveys of the population in our region. And when you have as few as 30 wolverines in an area as big as Washington, every individual counts. And so each time we get a hiker that comes in with that data card that says, oh, I've got a wolverine on camera, it is like a Christmas present. Both our staff and other conservationists and scientists working on this rare and endangered species are thrilled to have that data, and it's everyday hikers that are out there gathering it.
Well, you mentioned wolverines, but what else has the monitoring shown?
So one of the really great highlights of this program was back in 2008, we had been doing a number of surveys in Okanagan County and other areas of northeast and north central Washington looking for wolves. People came in with reports about wolves howling. They said they had seen tracks. And we were working with state and federal agencies to document this because wolves had been gone in our state for nearly a century. And after years of searching, one of our volunteers came in with just the most tremendous photos from the Mettow Valley of a family of wolves. Not just wolves, but pups. And it was the first time that wolf pups had been confirmed back in our state in nearly a century. And our volunteers were the ones that got that data. And those photos have been shared around the country since then. It really was a tremendous milestone of everyday folks out there hiking, camping, spending time in the outdoors, working with scientists, and bringing back incredibly valuable data, but data that also was very inspiring about the return of this wild creature to our state.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Chase Gunnell, Communications Director for Conservation Northwest, a nonprofit whose mission is to protect, connect, and restore wildlands and wildlife from the Washington coast to the British Columbia Rockies for the benefit of people and wildlife. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. As part of your efforts to connect habitat for wildlife, you've been involved in the effort to promote construction of wildlife crossings across I-90 near Suquamish Pass. First, why are wildlife crossings needed there?
Well, animals can't survive in islands of habitat. We think about these large wild areas that animals call home, and those are important. But animals need room to roam. They travel seasonally. For example, deer and elk will migrate from summer ranges high in the Cascade Mountains around the Alpine Lakes all the way down to the sagebrush country around Ellensburg or Vantage. Those seasonal migrations are often fragmented by roads. There's also animals like wolves or wolverines that might make a large migration in search of new mates or new territory to call home, or other animals like black bears, where we see fragmented populations in the North and South Cascades that are not intermingling because of roadways like I-90. So when you look at our landscape in the context of the big picture, roadways, and particularly freeways like Interstate 90 that have thousands of vehicles a day, present a significant barrier to animals moving about their daily business or annual migrations. And we want to work with various partners to reconnect those landscapes, to find ways to allow safe passage for wildlife, and also to decrease the danger for motorists and transportation, truckers. No one wants to run into an elk. Typically about $4,500 is the average cost of a vehicle-animal collision in this state. And projects like these wildlife crossings both allow for animals to migrate and find new places to call home, and it also helps keep motorists safe.
What types of crossings have been built and are being built across and under I-90?
It's really exciting now. If you travel over I-90 and across Snoqualmie Pass. And just as you go past the ski resort and are approaching Kitchilas Lake there at Hayak, you'll go over the first of several wildlife undercrossings. It's a 900-foot stretch of raised freeway over Gold Creek, which is an area that animals, including deer and elk, as well as otters and smaller creatures, regularly travel through. And they can now cross right under the freeway as if it wasn't even there. It's such a large and open stretch of crossing. We've documented a number of different species using that crossing, and everyday folks are now driving over it. As you go further east and drive towards the towns of Easton and Cle Elum, you'll pass several other smaller undercrossings that animals have already used and are now completed. And we've actually been working to restore some of the habitat around those crossings to make them even more appealing. And as you get a little bit further along, you'll go under what is now the construction site for the first wildlife bridge over I-90, which is expected to be completed in 2019.
Say more about the bridge.
The bridge is really exciting. It will be the largest wildlife overcrossing in North America when complete, and it's part of this comprehensive project of both wildlife undercrossings, culverts, and two overcrossings. The first one, as I mentioned, is now under construction, and a second one a little further east towards Easton will go into construction soon. Those are going to be fully vegetated, over 100 feet wide. It'll allow animals like elk herds, which might not always want to cross underneath the freeway. They can be afraid of those contained spaces. They will be able to cross right over the freeway like it wasn't even there. And, you know, a lot of people ask us, do these things really work? This is a big investment. It's a bridge for wildlife. And luckily, we're not reinventing the wheel here. Other states and other countries have successfully implemented these crossings in a number of areas. A great example is in Banff National Park up in Canada, where they have a number of these wildlife overcrossings over highways that transect the national park. Grizzly bears, caribou, wolves, elk, and other wildlife have been documented using them in increasing frequency, especially in the case of elk. Elk herds will actually teach their young to use this crossing structure, this migration path, and that will be passed on to future generations of cows and calves. And so it's really something that we expect to be tremendously successful. We expect animals to use it, and it's going to be really inspiring to be able to witness as we all drive under this structure, and at the same time, animals are using it to reconnect to their new territories or mates or new food on the other side.
Let's talk now specifically about your wolf conservation efforts. Would you remind us of the importance of wolves for Washington State and their role in healthy ecosystems?
Well, first I would say that wolves are really an icon of wilderness. The call of the wild, the howl of the wolf, I mean, these are things that whether you love wolves or you don't love wolves, I think they inspire a tremendous amount of passion in people. It's an animal that has been long gone from our region. Wolves were extirpated or went locally extinct here in Washington nearly a century ago. But in recent decades, they've been making their way back, and they've been recolonizing wild places in Washington from British Columbia, as well as from some of the wolves that were reintroduced in the 1990s to Yellowstone National Park and surrounding areas. Some of those wolves from Idaho and Montana have since traveled here to Washington State. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. Wolves were never reintroduced in our state. They came back here on their own four paws. They traveled down from BC and from the Rocky Mountains, and now they're making a home here. These are an animal that do play an important role in ecosystems. They're a keystone predator influencing the health of other animal species in the areas where they reside. But they're also an animal that can cause conflict and strong emotions as they get into trouble at times with livestock or pets. Wolves can be aggressive towards dogs, which are seen as a threat to their territories. But they're really an animal that other areas and other parts of the world have learned to coexist with. There are wolves in Europe, just outside some of the largest cities like Rome. We've got wolves in Alaska and Canada and around Yellowstone in the Northern Rockies. And now, once again, after a long absence, we have them here in the Cascades. In fact, the closest wolf pack to Seattle is in the Tianeway Valley, just over an hour away. That's a really special thing, and it's a great opportunity to have this icon of the wild back in our region. But we're going to have to learn to coexist, and that's going to take all of us working together.
How many packs and individuals do we have in Washington State right now, and where are they located?
So we're waiting on an updated count of wolves in Washington right now. That's expected out in March of this year. So we'll have a better understanding of what the latest is on the wolf population at that time. But as of last year's count, we had approximately 20 wolf packs and 120 wolves in our state. Now that's a minimum estimate. In all likelihood, the population is quite a bit higher than that. But we want to be careful and err on the conservative side when we're counting wildlife. So 120 wolves, about 20 packs. And most of those packs are located in the far northeast corner of our state, Ponderay, Stevens, and Ferry counties. There's also several packs in Okanagan County in north central Washington. That would be the area around the Metow Valley and the Pasayton Wilderness. And then as you move south, there's at least one pack in the central Cascades around the Tanaway Valley, as well as several packs in southeast Washington, east of Walla Walla in the Blue Mountains. So they're fairly spread out and they're recolonizing new areas. We would really like to see wolves moving into the south Cascades. I-90 appears to be somewhat of a barrier up to this point, and we hope those new wildlife crossings will help fix that. But wolves are an animal that travels widely, they reproduce quickly, and we can expect wolf recovery to continue in our state. Look forward to those counts in March to see where else they pop up.
What programs are in place to help restore and protect wolves in Washington state?
So wolves are listed as an endangered species by the state of Washington. They are not listed as an endangered species in the eastern third of our state by the federal government. However, they are still federally listed as an endangered species in the western portion of our state. And that alludes to what I mentioned about where the packs are. There's quite a few in the eastern edge of our state and much less in the western side. So it's important that those wolves in the Cascade Mountains, for example, continue to receive protections. What's important with wolves is that they're a species, as I mentioned, that invoke a great degree of passion. And it's important that the folks that live and work and play in areas where wolves are living learn to coexist with this species, to have a degree of acceptance to living alongside them, because they are a species that takes a bit of work to get used to. And we as a conservation organization and as a group that strongly advocates for the return of wolves, we want to work with local communities, with ranchers, with hunters, with farmers, with folks that may encounter wolves, whether they're out on the trail or out on the range, and help them learn to adapt. There are a number of tools that ranchers and farmers in other parts of the world use to coexist with wolves, from guard dogs to range riders to flagging on their fences. And we're helping to implement those same tools here, to work with folks to say, this is a new species on the landscape. It may present some challenges for you on occasion, but there are tools to make it work for everyone. And I think it's really important that folks recognize the challenges that wolves may present for local residents, but also recognize that there are tools out there to coexist with these amazing animals, and we're helping to implement those around our region.
Would you say just a few words about your Range Rider program?
Absolutely. So for the last 7 years, Conservation Northwest has worked on the ground with local ranchers in places like Colville and Omak and the area south of Wenatchee around the Tanaway Valley to help them implement Range Riders. And a Range Rider is really, in short, a cowboy. It's a man or a woman, typically on a horse, sometimes on an ATV, sometimes even on a mountain bike, who's out on the range with the livestock, either cattle or sheep, and helping provide some supervision, keeping an eye on things, monitoring for sick or injured cows that might be an easy target for predators, helping keep the livestock bunched up in a herd, which is much more defensive than individual animals out there on their own. And this was a common practice among ranchers 100 years ago when it was still the Wild West. But in the century since, many ranchers have not implemented cowboys or range riders to monitor their herds at any given time. But this is a practice that other areas, including Montana and Canada, have found to be very effective at reducing wolves. It presents a human deterrent, and the wolves tend to say, I don't want to bother with that large animal, with that person, and often a dog nearby. I'm going to go and find the deer or elk instead. And we're finding similar successes here with range riding. It really has reduced the level of depredations in areas where there are wolves overlapping with ranches. It's helped provide other benefits, including greater weight gain for cows, that it helps move them around to improve range conditions and find the best feed on the range and avoid damaging sensitive areas. And, you know, I should say it's not a program that's always going to be 100% effective. There are going to be conflicts with predators, whether that's wolves or cougars, anywhere that you ranch or raise livestock. But having those range riders in the field, providing a human presence, is effective, and we're seeing it be successful here in Washington State. It's a model that we hope more ranchers and farmers take on.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Trace Scannell, Communications Director for Conservation Northwest, a nonprofit whose mission is to protect, connect, and restore wildlands and wildlife from the Washington coast to the British Columbia Rockies for the benefit of people and wildlife. Would you now give us an update on the current status of grizzly bears and their restoration in the Washington Cascades?
Many people don't know that we have grizzly bears here in Washington, and it's really a special situation where we have two populations of grizzlies in Washington. We have a small number up in the very northeast corner of our state, around the Onderay Valley and the Selkirk Mountains, and then we have another population of grizzlies in the North Cascades. That population is considered the most at-risk bear population in the lower 48. It is the only grizzly bear population in the lower 48 outside the greater Rocky Mountains. And even though this transboundary ecosystem that stretches from British Columbia down to about I-90, which is the definition of the North Cascades grizzly bear recovery zone, is at more than 13,000 square miles, an area larger than Yellowstone National Park and the surrounding ecosystem, there are fewer than 10 grizzly bears there today. And as you might imagine, a population with less than 10 animals is not a sustainable population. It's a population that has been dwindling in recent decades and may soon disappear without our help. So for the last few years, the National Park Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, working with other agencies and Native American tribes and other stakeholders under the mandate of the Endangered Species Act, has been studying how best to recover this population. This is a Northwest icon. Grizzly bears once roamed all across our region and have been here for at least 20,000 years since the last ice age, and yet today there's fewer than 10 left. The North Cascades is one of the wildest areas left in the lower 48. We've got rugged backcountry habitat far from people. It's anchored by North Cascades National Park, an area that's got much fewer development and visitation than other national parks such as Yellowstone. And scientists have determined that even as our region grows and more people are visiting these areas, the North Cascades remain a great home for grizzly bears. There's abundant food, good backcountry habitat. There's already programs in place to reduce conflicts between bears and people. Because this is a grizzly bear recovery zone and has been managed as one since 1997, if you're backpacking the North Cascades, you're already required to be bear aware and to carry bear canisters in the national park. There are special garbage cans set up in campgrounds to limit conflicts with bears. So all the pieces are in place for an ecosystem that includes grizzly bears, except for the grizzly bears. And we would very much like to see action taken to restore these icons before it's too late. Because today we have a chance to save this population and to turn them around, to bring them back. Tomorrow we might not have that chance. They might all be gone. It would be starting from scratch.
What steps are being proposed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Park Service to bring the grizzlies back?
As part of this multi-year process, which is called an Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, these agencies took several years of public comment and input about how to proceed with restoring the North Cascades grizzly bear. They held forums in communities around the North Cascades ecosystem. They took online comment. They consulted with scientists and biologists and other experts who've worked on grizzly bear recovery in other areas, and they drafted a list of alternatives. Those alternatives for how to restore grizzly bears in the North Cascades ranged from bringing in a small number of bears from an area with similar habitat. This would probably be somewhere like northwest Montana or central British Columbia, areas that have similar habitat and food sources to the North Cascades. You know, we don't want to be bringing in bears from Alaska that are used to feeding on salmon. We want bears that are used to feeding on ground squirrels and moths and vegetation. Many people might not know, but grizzly bears are actually primarily omnivorous. They eat up to 80% of their diet as plants and insects. So we want bears that are used to similar habitat and could make a home in the North Cascades. That alternative proposed bringing in up to 25 bears over a period of 5 to 10 years. So a very slow process, but bringing in some individual animals to augment the population in our region. And I should be clear that those would be animals that have no history of conflict with humans. They're well-behaved bears who could make a good home here. And as I said, there was a range of alternatives. The other end of that range was taking no action. This is something that we certainly oppose. We've taken no action for North Cascades grizzly bears for over 20 years now. And what we've seen is the population has continued to decline to the point where now there are very few sightings or documented cases of grizzly bears in the North Cascades. Most of those that do occur are on the British Columbia side of the ecosystem, and they're at the risk of winking out. We would like to see action taken to help restore this Northwest icon before it's too late.
What is the current status of the proposal to bring back grizzlies?
So as I said, there was several phases of the EIS. There was public input taken, and the agencies were in the process of studying that latest round of public input and revising their alternatives with the intention of selecting a preferred alternative, a plan to restore this population. Unfortunately, in recent months, our understanding is that that plan has been put on hold due to changes at the federal level in Washington, D.C. There are currently some open leadership positions at the National Park Service and at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And our hope is that this plan will be resumed once again once those leadership positions are filled. We're certainly advocating that agencies take into account the great amount of public support for this issue, the amount of education and outreach that's already occurred, and see this process through to the finish line. We're just about there, and we hate to see it put on hold, but we're hopeful that it'll be picked up once again. And I think it's important to keep in mind that there have been numerous polls and public input opportunities on this issue over the last few years, and all of them consistently have shown that Washingtonians support restoring this native species in the North Cascades. In fact, both the polls and the initial scoping comments found more than 80% support for restoring grizzly bears in the North Cascades. We hope the folks in Washington, D.C. pay attention to that when they take a decision whether to move forward on this as well.
What do you consider to be the greatest accomplishments of Conservation Northwest?
Conservation Northwest is an organization that prides itself on being a part of the communities that we work in. We have staff on the ground in small towns and communities across eastern Washington all the way up into British Columbia. And we really are a group that sits down at the table with people often different than us and works towards common ground solutions. And that's what I'm proud to be a part of. Animals and conservation and our natural heritage are ideals that I think many people share, regardless of their political leanings. And working together to find common ground, to restore species like wolves and grizzly bears, to protect wilderness and public lands, to promote sustainable forestry, these are things that we can bring people together on. And Conservation Northwest has been able to do that. Some of the work that we've done to help promote tolerance for wolves, I think, is tremendous, and it's a model for how people and wildlife can coexist in other areas. Our advocacy for wildlife crossings under and over I-90, it's a great project here in our state. It's going to be incredible to be able to drive through those crossings, the animals walk over them and use them to cross the highway. But even more importantly, it's a model for how infrastructure projects can be completed in other areas, taking into account both the needs of humans and wildlife. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that much of our work and our collaborations, our partnerships with other organizations and state and federal agencies are a blueprint for conservation in the modern era.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would say that if you're a Seattleite or a Washingtonian, you know that our region is growing. You know that it's changing. You know that it's developing. And all of these things put pressure on wildlife, and wilderness and public lands. But we have a really unique opportunity here in our state to balance the growth of our region, growth of our population with our natural heritage, with the wildlife that's right out our back door in the Cascades, across the Sound in the Olympics, to the north in Canada. We can maintain our wolves and our grizzly bears, our public lands and our wilderness while our population grows and while our region changes. It's going to take hard work. It's going to take collaboration, but it's something that we know is possible. And that's a really inspiring thought.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Chase.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are just listening to Chase Scannell, Communications Director for Conservation Northwest. For more information, check on the web at conservationnw.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.